week's schedule is as on the webpage, but next week, the Thursday afternoon and Friday morning are changing to Friday morning and Friday afternoon. So if you show up on Thursday afternoon, then sorry, we won't be here. In the meantime, of course, anybody with emailed questions about the project, feel free to contact me. All right, what I started talking about last time, jumping into public key cryptography, was curve 25519, typical but very optimized example of elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman, and I'd like to give you the computational details . Focus on the essential tricks that you need in order to make this function run quickly on the computer. To remind you what the function does, there are two inputs to it. Just like if you have some number mod 2 to the 255 minus 19 and an exponent, that number and the exponent would be the two inputs. Here, the exponent is e. And then the other thing, instead of being just a number that you take powers of, is a point on this particular elliptic curve, curve 25519. But you're not given the whole point, which I'm calling q, you're given the x-coordinate of q, which is an element of z mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. x0 there, to be precise, is the x-coordinate of q if q is a point x comma y. Being on the curve means y squared equals x cubed plus 486662 x squared plus x. All of that modulo 2 to the 255 minus 19, you're given x. The sub-zero there means that if q is actually the point at infinity, one other point on the curve, then you are given 0, which is also the x-coordinate of the point 0, 0, which certainly satisfies y squared equals blah, blah, blah plus x. The point q does not have to have both its x and y coordinates being in this field, z mod 2 to the 255 minus 19, but its x-coordinate does have to be. So you're given some x, and imagine out there that there's some y. There is always some y. In fact, usually two choices of y satisfying y squared equals x cubed plus etc. Your desired output, what curve 25519 computes given these two inputs, is the x-coordinate of e times q. And let me, for reference, remind you of all the definitions of what's going on here. Well, the critical ones, this e is a 255-bit integer, and it's actually constrained a little bit, one of the tweaks in curve 25519, to slightly streamline things and clarify things from a security perspective, but we won't care about that for the computation. It's just a 255-bit number. Okay, you could slightly speed up the computation, taking advantage of the restrictions on E, but won't worry about that further. E is an integer, positive integer. If E were 0, then the answer would be 0. If E were negative, then the answer would be exactly the same as if you negated it. But, okay, E is restricted to be a positive number. What else do we have here? Well, Q is a point on this particular elliptic curve. Q is an element of the set E of K. And what is K? K is the field z mod 2 to the 255 minus 19 along with some square root, namely a square root of 2, which actually gives it square roots of everything in the base field. As usual for finite fields, doing a quadratic extension gives you square roots of everything you started with. E is the elliptic curve y squared equals x cubed plus 486662 x squared plus x. For those of you who've seen elliptic curves before, you'd say, hey, is that actually elliptic? Is 486662 squared minus 4 non-zero? And it is. Because it's much smaller than 2 to the 255 minus 19, which is a prime. What else is there to say definition-wise? X0, just to repeat the definition, as a mathematician, I feel obliged to nitpick, and x0 is not the usual x-coordinate function. It is a function from e of k to k that satisfies x0 of a normal affine point x comma y is x. And if you give it infinity, x0 of infinity is 0. And I think I've defined all the notation I'm using there except for the e times q. This is the eth multiple of Q on the elliptic curve. Given this information, you could compute the output by using any of the formulas in the literature for working with elliptic curves. You could say, okay, I'm given some x, and then I figure out some y, a square root of x cubed plus 4866662 x squared plus x, which might be why I might have to involve a square root of 2 in it if the x cubed plus et cetera is not a square in the base field, but figure out the square root. And then you have x and y coordinates of q, which, okay, there could have been another q to start with, but they'll all give the same answer. So you have your x and y of a point q, and then follow through whatever elliptic curve formulas to multiply by e, and at the end you have e times q, take its x coordinate, or take 0 if you have the point in infinity, and there's your output. But the particularly efficient formulas for doing this that I quoted from last time are Montgomery's formulas, and for simplicity, I assumed in stating those formulas that we don't encounter infinity, and then the divisions that occur, well, we're not going to divide by zero just by assumption, and you should worry about what happens if you do end up dividing by zero. I'll get back to that. What Montgomery's formulas say in that case, Montgomery's recursion produces x, 0 or x, they're the same if you don't have infinity running around, from x of q by, for example, suppose you want x 0 of, say, 7q, then Montgomery's recursion said, well, you take x 0 of 3q and 4q, which you compute by same formulas recursively, and let's see, start by multiplying x0 of 4q times x0 of 3q and subtract 1 and then square the result and then divide by the difference x0 of 4q minus x0 of 3q, divide by the square of that difference, and I shouldn't forget to divide by the original x0 of q. That's just an example of Montgomery's formulas, which give you 7 times a point, the x-coordinate of 7 times a point, from a couple of previous x-coordinates in a remarkably simple way, which I should mention depends on the fact that there's a 1 something 1 0 for the coefficients of the cubic in x. Otherwise, you get different formulas, more complicated formulas, slower formulas for the similar recursion. All right, that's a typical case of the formulas, and then you work up in this way to x0 of arbitrarily large numbers in a reasonable amount of time. What else is there to say about Montgomery? Yes, the cost of it. Looking at this equation, well, for getting from 3 and 4q up to 7q, there's a division and some squarings. Multiplications, there's multiplication right there, multiplication there, assuming you do the division by the product rather than dividing and dividing again. Overall, for a 255-bit E, there's something like 510 divisions, and I still haven't counted, maybe it's 509 or 511, but there's, let's just say, 510 divisions, and there's also quite a few multiplications and additions and subtractions, and multiplications by 486662 show up every now and then, but the critical operation is the divisions. Why is it 2 times every bit? Well, getting from 3q and 4q to 7 and 6q, or to 7 and 8q, depending which one you need, depending on bits of e, getting from 2 of these to 2 of those requires 2 divisions for the 2 relevant formulas, and overall for 255 bits of e, there are 2 divisions for each bit, total of 510 divisions, which raises the question of how do we efficiently divide on real computers in a finite field. Let's say a prime field, let's say in particular 2 to the 255 minus 19. This simple question has an amazingly large spectrum of answers. And I'm mostly going to stick to the simplest answer, before I get into that, let me just pause. Were there any questions about the definition of curve 255519 or, returning to stuff from last time, what this is good for, what elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman does for us? If there's anything that I've left out of the curve 255519 description, I should get into that before I say more about the computation, but looks like I've got everything. So, the easy way to divide is to use Fermat. Fermat's last theorem? No, Fermat's little theorem, which says that if you want to compute a reciprocal modulo q, you compute a q minus 2 power. The reciprocal of any number, let's call it u mod 2 to the 255, which I should emphasize here, mod the prime 2 to the 255 minus 19, is the q minus 2, that's the 2 to the 255 minus 21, power of u. U to the 2 to the 255 minus 21. All in the exponent. And that's something you can compute quickly. If I left out the minus 21, well, you just square u 255 times. And, well, even with the minus 21, it's not too hard to come up with an addition chain that gets from 1 up to this big particular number with not very many additions. In other words, gets from u to this big power of u with not many multiplications. You can easily compute this power, compute with a straightforward chain of 254 squarings and 11 multiplications. 254 SQ plus 11 general multiplications. I don't know if that's optimal. If anybody would like to do a combinatorial search for all possible 10 multiplication chains, it'd be interesting if there is something that's a little bit faster, but okay, the dominant cost is the 254 squarings, overall 265 multiplications, modulo 2 to the 255 minus 19, and we have to do that 510 times. The total is about 510 times 254 or so, and then plus little things like the extra multiplications, and then along with each division, there's some extra multiplications, which I'm not counting, but basically number of divisions per exponentiation and number of squarings per division, that's the critical cost in doing Montgomery's recursion, about this many squarings to compute x0 of EQ. And that's a lot of squarings, each of which takes, let's say, 2 to the 7th cycles, 100-something cycles, depending on your computer. I'll get back to the cost of doing arithmetic mod this prime, but we've seen doing arithmetic mod 2 to the 130 minus 5, and you can imagine that things are going to scale up in some believable way to 2 to the 255 minus 19. Squaring, on the other hand, is faster, and I'll say a little bit about that. But overall, it's, let's say, 100 or 2 to the 7 cycles for squaring times 2 to the 8 for this 256 times 2 to the 9 for the 510. 7 plus 8 plus 9 sounds like 2 to the 24 cycles, approximately. 2 to the 24 CPU cycles. 16 million. It's quite a lot more than the 500,000 or most 1 million that I was mentioning for the speed of this computation. Anything else to say about division? No, I think this is good enough for Fermat. As I said, there's a huge number of answers to the question of how do we divide. And what you might think we should do is, instead of Fermat, use Euclid, which is certainly a better answer in terms of number of cycles spent. But it's going in the wrong direction compared to the even better answer, which I'll say next. But let me first explore Euclid. Euclid's algorithm, as you know, computes the greatest common divisor of two numbers by dividing one by the other and replacing it with its remainder, and then switching the roles of the numbers. Take A mod B, replace, if you have A and B, replace A by A mod B, and then switch the numbers and repeat until you're down to something and zero, and that something is the greatest common divisor of A and B. And while you're doing that, you can also keep track of numbers that let you easily reconstruct the reciprocal of A mod B, assuming that the greatest common divisor is 1. You can write your answer, the GCD, let's say 1, as a linear combination of A and B by keeping track of your quotients through Euclid's algorithm. One little annoyance in using Euclid's algorithm in cryptography is that it does all these branches depending on how big its inputs are. The division of A by B and then division of B by the remainder, while the time taken there depends very much on the sizes of the remainders that you encounter, which might leak information about A and B if they're secret. But parenthetically, I'll mention, if you use Euclid, then you can randomize Euclid to protect against timing attacks. In general, to protect against side channels, ignoring the parenthetical part of that, Euclid's algorithm runs at an amazingly low number of bit operations, and I have quoted here the number of bit operations the asymptotics for Euclid's algorithm or for inversion. This is, I should give credit to Lamer in the 1930s, had the critical idea for optimizing Euclid's algorithm. That was before fast multiplication was understood. So Knuth in 1971 said, hey, Lamer's idea works really well with fast multiplication that we now appreciate from the late 60s. And then this particular result, the best we have that I'm going to quote, is from Schoenhage in 1971. Schoenhage. Suppose that you have B bits in a prime, then computing a greatest common divisor takes something close to a multiplication speed that I've quoted before. This is the number of bit operations to compute. So B here is, suppose you have two numbers with B bits, you want their greatest common divisor or reciprocal of one mod the other, which is what I care about. This is to compute a reciprocal mod a B bit integer number that if you multiply by the original input, then you get 1 mod that integer, assuming, of course, that your other input that you're computing the reciprocal of is also on the scale of B bits. Then the total time here is something like what I've written down for multiplication, exactly what I've written down for multiplication of B-bit numbers, times an extra log B factor. Compare this to big O of log B multiplications. Ignoring all the log Bs, this scales amazingly well. As you go up to, say, million-bit numbers, every time you double the number of bits, you have something essentially linear in B. Every doubling of B is just doubling the number of bit operations, roughly, to compute greatest common divisors or reciprocals, modular reciprocals. Doesn't scale quite as fast as multiplication. I'll get back to that in a little bit, but it's surprisingly fast. What does this mean for computing exponentials? Suppose you have a B bit E, then there's overall B squared, log B squared, log B, assuming that you're doing this operation b times or 2b times for a b-bit exponent. I had for a 255-bit e 510 divisions. In general, for a b-bit exponent, you would have 2 times b divisions, each of which is one of these operations taking b log squared b log b bit operations, which overall is b squared, log b squared, log b. This is pretty good scaling. This is the total cost. If you want something like B-bit security, you might have a 2B-bit elliptic curve, and then your exponentiation on that elliptic curve would be B squared times log B squared times log B bit operations. Okay, that's the baby analysis of the cost of doing this inversion, which is still, I said this is something you might try. It's still definitely not the best that we have. I'm sorry? A Euclid is the one where you take two integers and you divide one, you replace one by its remainder mod the other, and then switch the numbers and repeat until you're down to zero. And if you're interested in more details about Euclid's algorithm, I highly recommend Knuth's Art of Computer Programming, which has section 452 and 453 devoted to the study of Euclid's algorithm. Goes through starting from the basics, how Euclid's algorithm works and how fast it is, and lots of improvements to it, and both for computing GCDs and for computing reciprocals. But again, this is not the direction that we're actually going to go. We're going to go in a direction that is simultaneously faster and easier, so you should be happy throwing away Euclid's algorithm in favor of... A question? Yes, right. Tanya's comment is that computing reciprocal mod something is extended Euclid algorithm, extended GCD. That's the usual name for a Google search. Okay, but throwing Euclid away, let's do something better, which is delaying divisions. Through this algorithm, we've got all these divisions, 510 divisions, some easy sequence of operations. Easy is maybe the wrong word, but Montgomery says, starting from x0 of q, here is exactly the recursion, here's the multiplications, subtractions, additions, divisions that you do in order to come up with x0 of eq. And when Montgomery says do a division, you don't have to do it. Wait a minute, what do you do? Well, okay, if someone says that you should now divide 11 by 17, then your response should be, no, I'm not going to divide 11 by 17. I'm just going to remember that you told me to divide 11 by 17. You remember a fraction. Fraction. In other words, you remember the pair 11 and 17. And then someone tells you to take that result and subtract 1 from it. For example, or subtract something else. And you can go ahead and do that with the fraction. Don't keep writing down longer and longer expressions, just restating what the recursion did. When you have a fraction, it's easy to do the division. Easy to do the subtraction. I mean, take 11 17ths minus 1, that sounds like minus 6 over 17. And then someone might tell you to multiply by 3, for example. And that's something that you'll do. Multiply minus 6 by 3 and get minus 18 over 17. And then someone might have a division that you have to do. Divide by something else. Maybe even divide by a fraction. Divide by 12 over 15. And at that point you say, sort of, okay, I'm going to do something. But it's certainly not going to be a division. I'm going to take minus 18 over 17 and divide by 12 over 15, which requires a tricky flip of the numerator and denominator. Instead, I'm going to do, dividing by 12 over 15 means multiplying by 15 over 12. 15 over 12 times minus 18 over 17. And then what do we end up writing down? As our result, 15 times 18, starting to get big. 5 times 18 is 90, times another 3 is 270, minus 270, divided by 12 times 17. Another tricky calculation. Sounds like 17 times 6, maybe, would be an easy way to get started on this, is 34 times 3 is 102, times another 2 is 204, minus 270 over 204, etc. And at the end of the computation, when someone says, okay, I really do want to know the result, mod 2 to the 255 minus 19, and don't give me this fraction, you're supposed to give me an integer between 0 and 2 to the 255 minus 20, at the very end of the computation, you do one division, do one modular division to convert your answer to the right. Do one modular reciprocal, division, to convert your answer to the right output format. You do need to tell somebody according to the specification of the curve 25519 function, your answer needs to be represented as an integer, which in turn is represented as a byte string. You might question this and say, hey, maybe the definition of how our internet protocols, cryptographic protocols, should work should allow fractions to be transmitted everywhere. And you can actually do that. You have to watch out a little bit from a security perspective, and then it costs some bandwidth, and it's better to do this one division at the end, because it's just one division, which is not a bottleneck compared to everything else that's happening. Montgomery went ahead and did this. Montgomery said, okay, instead of doing the divisions, I'm not going to actually tell people to do divisions because they'll resist that, and he said, I'm going to represent x or x0, again, ignoring the possibility of infinity showing up, represented x0 of n times something, for whatever number n, as a quotient, xn divided by zn. Montgomery was 87. So here is the resulting recurrence. Little xn and little zn, I'm just going to have positive n, so those shouldn't be confused with the x0 for x-coordinates. Starting from the input, x0 of q, we define little x1 as x0 of q. That's one of the inputs. If you like, x1 is your input mod to the 255 minus 19. And z1 is 1, and okay, it is true that x1 over z1 is x0 of q, which is x0 of 1q. And then continuing, he defined x sub 2n as, let's see, should be xn squared minus zn squared squared. Remember the formula for the x-coordinate of 2nq. It was something where the numerator was the x-coordinate of nq squared minus 1 squared. And if you imagine that the x coordinate of nq is a fraction, this xn over zn, and you square it, and then subtract 1, and then clear denominators, and then square the result, then you get exactly this x2n that I've shown. Maybe I should comment, in case the example doesn't make it clear, you should never be searching for common factors here. You should just write down the easiest things you can, and the easiest multiplications and additions that give you the right result. Definitely don't try to look for, say, factors of 2 here. And the easiest result by far for the numerator of the 2nq multiple of q on this elliptic curve, just transforming Montgomery's previous formulas, this is certainly the easiest numerator for it. But I could have multiplied it by more things or divided it by more things if that had come out to be easier. Z sub 2n is, let's see here, it should be 4 times xn times zn times xn squared plus 486662 xn zn plus zn squared. If you divide the x2n by z2n that I've just written down, then you see that you get a function of xn over zn. And if you divide out all those xn over zn's and you assume that xn over zn is x of nq or x0 of nq, then this x2n over z2n exactly matches the formulas I wrote last time, which I'm not going to repeat aside from this transformation of them, exactly matches the formulas last time for the x-coordinate of 2nq. So again, z2n is 4xnzn times xn squared plus the curve coefficient 486662xnzn plus zn squared. To complete the recursion, we need odd indices past 1. x2n plus 1 is... here I'm going to stick in a 4 that didn't show up in the original formulas, and I'm also going to stick a 4 into the denominator part, the z2n plus 1. In Montgomery's formulas, if you remember them from last time, there was a multiplication of the x-coordinates of nq and n plus 1q. Multiply xn by xn plus 1, and then subtract 1 minus zn zn plus 1, and then square the result. And then, again, I've stuck in a 4, which I'll cancel by sticking a 4 into z2n plus 1 is 4 times the difference of the x-coordinates is xn zn plus 1 minus zn xn plus 1 squared. And let me not forget the multiplication by x of q multiplied by x sub 1. Alright, so there's a recurrence, just multiplications and additions and subtractions at this point, which produces exactly x0 of nq at the end, x0 of, eq, whatever we want, but in general, x0 of anything times q is exactly xn divided by zn. And here I'll just substitute in Fermat's answer for division by zn, because this is such a small part of the computation, one division at the end, that even if I do this ridiculously slow, okay, it's not so much slower than Euclid, but fairly slow method of doing reciprocals, computing 1 over zn as the 2 to the 255 minus 21 power of zn, even if I compute 1 over zn that way, it happens only once for computing x0 of nq, as opposed to through the rest of the computation, there's a whole lot of multiplications which are more serious. When I get down to implementation speeds, we'll see that this computation is only 1/10 or so of the total curve 25519 computation. And you might say, hey, 10% is still something to pay attention to. Maybe we should use Euclid. And yeah, if you get that working and randomize it appropriately, it should be a little bit faster. But it's only 10% of the computation, not a whole lot of room for speed ups there, because it's just one division. Okay, all these formulas, this fact that x0 of nq is xn zn to the 2 to the 255 minus 21, where the xn's and zn's are recursively defined by these formulas, this is actually true even if you do encounter infinity. This is true even if infinity does show up. There are no exceptions to this formula for x0 of nq. Montgomery was looking at a different application where he didn't care about the possibility of infinity occasionally showing up. He just wanted something that worked in most cases, almost all cases, and so he didn't bother with analyzing these cases. But if you just write down his same formulas and ask what happens if an infinity pops up as q or 7q or some intermediate quantity, then you see that actually, yeah, the answer does come out to be the right x0. This is where it's important, this true. Here I've been careful to put in x0. If I had said x instead of x0, it wouldn't be true, but it is true for x0, that you always get x0 of nq, which is exactly what curve 25519 is defined as, from x0 of q by this polynomial recursion. If you like, you can throw away all the elliptic curves and say, this is the definition of curve 25519. You can simply define curve 25519 of two inputs, E and X1. If you have just one input, the other input is a 9, public constant. You can simply define it as the answer here, this Xn times Zn to the 2 to the 255 minus 21. And maybe I should emphasize this is all mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. Where, the n there should have been an e, sorry about that, x sub e times z sub e to the 2 to the 255 minus 21. And then the relationship between the xe and ze and the input x1 there is just follow through the recursion that I just wrote down. You define z1 and x2n and z2n and x2n plus 1 and z2n plus 1 recursively. These are defined as above. Compared to all the different formulas you find in the literature, these are amazingly concise. These are amazingly short formulas that do happen to give you multiplication by n or by e on an elliptic curve. Amazingly short formulas for scalar multiplication. On an elliptic curve. You don't have to know anything about elliptic curves to just go ahead with this computation, and it's pretty close to the fastest formulas we have. I'll improve them in just a moment. But the improvements are something where you can start from this definition of the x2n and z2n, and occasionally when I'm presenting this function, I'll just say, all right, here's some formulas, and starting from the input x1 and your desired index e, you take xe divided by ze by this xe times the power of ze, and there is the curve 25519 output. Of course, the mathematical structure here, the magic equation that applying this to f and then to e gives you the same as applying it to e and then to f, well, that relies on the fact that there's a group running around, the elliptic curve group. And doing all the security analysis of that, certainly you should be talking about elliptic curves and thinking about what people say about the difficulty of elliptic curve discrete logarithms, elliptic curve DDH, and various other elliptic curve computations. But for writing down a definition and doing computations, this recurrence is just fine. So there is Montgomery's recurrence. But actually, he did even better. Let's count the cost of this of doing this recurrence. And did I have anything else to stick in here? Let's see. No. So let's just do evaluating the cost here. And now I'm going to count carefully the number of multiplications. What happens for each bit of E? 255 times, we have to apply the doubling and doubling plus one formulas. We're going to have to use each of the four recurrent formulas here to get from n and n plus one to 2n and 2n plus one, or if the bit of E demands that you get to 2n plus one and 2n plus two, then that requires, well, the same four formulas but in a different order, because x2n plus two comes from xn plus one and zn plus one and so on. You're always going to use all four of these formulas each exactly once for each bit of E, but the way in which you put the inputs is going to depend on your bits of E, which incidentally, this is where the selection of an array element with a variable index shows up, that you have at each moment some x2n and x2n plus 1 sitting in an array, and z2n and z2n plus 1 sitting in an array in memory, and depending on the next bit of what you have to do, whether you want, well, starting from xn and xn plus 1, do you want to double xn or do you want to double xn plus 1? Do you want x2n and z2n, or do you want x2n plus 2 and z2n plus 2? And to figure that out, you look at a bit of E, a secret bit, and then look up that element of the array, which, oops, could leak your secret bit to a timing attack or hyper-threading attack, any sort of side-channel attack that sees your address bus. And to avoid that, the easy thing to do is take your bit times one of the x values plus one minus bit times the other x value, which is doing a little bit more computation, but nothing compared to all the multiplications mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. You can easily select one or the other without doing a variable address load. You just do a little computation loading both of the results, and then the result of that computation in constant time is xn plus the bit. Of course, that idea doesn't scale very well to selecting for more than two numbers, but here we just have to select xn or xn plus 1 to choose the right formulas to use. Okay, whatever you do for selecting the formulas, you will, for each bit of E, end up using each formula once. How many multiplications are there? There's a squaring of xn, squaring of zn, a squaring of the difference. That's three so far. There is squaring of xn. We did that already. Squaring of zn. We did that already. There's an xn times zn. Okay, that's new. So now we're up to four multiplications. And then multiplying xn, zn by this sum, that's five multiplications. And ooh, there's kind of a small multiplication, but we have to do it, times 4, 8, 6, 6, 6, 2. So that's six multiplications. And then there's a multiplication by four. Well, okay, that'll probably be a couple of doublings, so we won't worry about that. So six multiplications so far, and then 7, 8, 9, 10 multiplications, 11, 12 for the squarings. And a multiplication by x1 sounds like 13 multiplications total, many of which are squarings. 13 multiplications. One of them was easier. Some of them special. Some of them being, for example, squarings or multiplications by a really small number like 4, 8, 6, 6, 6, 2. And some of that multiplication by 4 is so easy I'm not even going to count it. For each bit of E. Now, this is a kind of crude analysis, and I don't want to suggest that you should actually do an evaluation of speeds this way. You should, of course, also count multiplications by 4 and additions, and you shouldn't forget the extra work at the end. So this is a very crude analysis. You should also count the final division time at the end, and you should count the multiplications by 4 and the additions and subtractions and so on. But at least for seeing the next optimization, this is good enough to understand the number of multiplications that we're doing roughly, and then keep in mind some of them are faster, and then there's a little more work. How much work is there total in these Montgomery formulas for computing an eth multiple on an elliptic curve? Well, we have to do 255 times 13 multiplications, plus a little more stuff. Roughly 255 times 13, and let's just call this 3,500, well, adding in some more of the multiplications out there. This is less than 4,000 multiplications to compute curve 25519. And that is, of course, much, much, much faster than the 510 times 254 squarings we had before. 100,000, more than 100,000 squarings versus only 4,000 or so multiplications, many of which are squarings. This is a huge speed up. You can see this speed up in the baby analysis. You don't even have to think about constant factors. Just looking at log factors from the asymptotic perspective, going through exactly the same improvement, that would be my cell phone going boop, 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 boop. From the big O perspective, what happens here is that instead of having to do a division at each step, which had this b log b squared log log b, you just have to do some number of multiplications, which is b log log b without the square. At the end of the day, the total number of bit operations is big O of b squared times log b without a square times log log b. This is the number of bit operations for a b-bit elliptic curve scalar multiplication. You might ask if that's the best you can do for elliptic curves, if it's the best you can do for Diffie-Hellman generally, best you can do for public key, anything. And, well, there's lots of research. There's considerable speculation that you can do better. We'll see how things work out in the future, but at least for right now, this is the speed of doing this computation asymptotically. And you might think that the log b factor speed up corresponds pretty well to the 100,000 or so down to 4,000 multiplications. Log of b, if b is, say, 256, then log b is a factor of 8. And we've saved, actually, 100,000 down to 4,000 sounds like a factor of, I don't know, 32 or so. So it's something on the scale of a logarithmic factor. The big O has not been terribly misleading in this case. Okay, unusual case where the course is not just talking about constant factor improvements. But let's do some constant factor improvements. So here, Montgomery's last optimization of this was saying, hey, it's not just 13 multiplications. You didn't count right. There's actually just 10 multiplications here. Is that obvious? More speed-ups. And these are just constant factor speed-ups. But, hey, every little bit. This is so easy to do. Let's just do it. Montgomery said xn squared minus zn squared squared. Might sound like a good idea to do that by 3 squares, but I'm going to do it differently. He said compute xn squared. No, let's subtract zn from it and square the result. And let's take xn plus zn and square the result. And, okay, you can see where this is going, that xn minus zn times xn plus zn is xn squared minus zn squared. So that's x2n is the product. x2n is dot, product of those two results. Why compute x2n in this different way? Well, that makes the computation of z2n much, much easier. because the difference of the squares there is exactly 4xnzn. 4xnzn is exactly the difference between these two quadratics. It's xn plus vn squared minus xn minus vn squared. Xn plus vn squared is xn squared plus vn squared plus 2xnzn. And then with minus, you get a minus. 2xnzn minus minus 2xnzn sounds like 4xnzn. So with just one subtraction, we save one of the products that we were doing before. And this other quadratic form that we're evaluating, it should be obvious that if you're evaluating many quadratic forms in two variables, then you don't need to do all that many multiplications. You just have a few possibilities for xn squared and vn squared, and you should get everything else out of that with just some linear operations. And that's what Montgomery does. He observes that z2n is this 4xnzn that we just computed times what's in the xn squared plus 2. Am I misreading it a bit? Well, I think it's xn squared plus 2xnzn plus vn squared, which we already know. It's xn plus vn squared. Except, oops, looking more closely, I did leave out a 486660 xnzn, which is 121665 times something we know, 4xnzn. Let's double check this. 121665 times 4 plus 2xnzn is, if I calculated correctly, 486662. And then we've got an xn squared and zn squared that we need, and there's the 4xnzn. I do believe this is equivalent to the formula I wrote down before. And now how many multiplications do we have? We just did a squaring, another multiplication. A difference, no multiplications there. Multiplication by a small number. We already have this squaring, and then one more multiplication there. So that is 1, 2, 3, small multiplication, and 4, total of 5, of which one is small and some of them are squarings. And then Montgomery looks at the xn, xn plus 1, zn, zn plus 1, xn, zn plus 1, and zn, xn plus 1, and says, hey, that's a standard kind of combination of dot products. Remember Winograd's dot product trick, and lots of people have come up with improvements for these sorts of things that you can easily apply here. And observe that, let's suppose we take xn plus, see if I can do this right, xn plus zn times xn plus 1, plus zn plus 1. Suppose we multiply those. What do we get? We get xn, I have this awful feeling that actually I want to multiply by xn plus 1 minus zn plus 1. So let's try that. Xn plus zn times xn plus 1 minus zn plus 1 is xn times xn plus 1 plus xn times, plus zn times xn plus 1 minus a xn zn plus 1 and then minus a zn zn plus 1. All right, so with one multiplication we get this combination of four products, and then with another multiplication, suppose I swap the plus and minus I just did, xn minus zn times xn plus 1 plus zn plus 1 is, let's see, xn plus 1 and xn get multiplied as before. We have a minus zn xn plus 1. And then looks like plus xn zn plus 1 and minus zn zn plus 1. What happens if we add these two products? Well, you get some nice cancellation. Minus zn xn plus 1 cancels, and plus and minus xn zn plus 1 cancel, and we're left with just 2 times xn xn plus 1 minus 2 times zn zn plus 1, which, aside from the 2, is exactly what's here. And aha, there's the 2. It's been squared. That's why Montgomery stuck in the 4 into x2n plus 1 and z2n plus 1. Initially seems like a waste of time. It'll just cancel. But here you can see 2 squared pops up naturally. We finally get x2n plus 1 as the square of the sum of these two products. Add the last two products and square them, and that's exactly x2n plus 1. And similarly, z2n plus 1 is, take the difference, yep, and square it, and don't forget to multiply by x1. Here, instead of doing four products as before, we've extracted both of them as plus and minus of two products, and also gotten rid of the fours that were stuck in light of doing this, and then there was one more multiplication by x1, and of course there's those squarings. Overall, there's five multiplications for the odd part of the recurrence. So, here are, once again, Montgomery's formulas, which might not look at all like what I wrote at the beginning, but all right, these are all equivalent. He starts from xn and zn, and xn plus 1 and zn plus 1, and does some additions and subtractions, adds xn to zn, subtracts xn minus zn, and also does addition of xn plus 1 plus zn plus 1 and xn plus 1 minus zn plus 1. Let's proceed down the left side first to get to x2n and z2n will appear at the bottom in this computation graph. We take xn plus zn and square it. That x there is not meant to be an x-coordinate. It's my next use of an x. That's a times. Maybe I should just do a dot. But, okay, this is multiplying two inputs, both of them being xn plus zn, giving the xn plus zn squared that we wanted. Also, we need xn minus zn squared. And then the product of those is exactly x2n. Putting together z2n needs a little more work. We have to take the difference of these squares. There's a minus. And then we have to multiply it by 121665 times 121665. Here I think the dot is visible, multiplied by 121665. That's a minus, that's a dot, 121665. And then add the result to xn plus zn squared, which is lurking somewhere here. I guess it's right over here, coming around the side. Xn plus zn squared plus 121665 times the 4xn zn, okay, plus, and then multiply the result by 4xn zn times, well, do a big cross so you can see it. Question?
Isn't your error
coming from too high? It could be. I want xn plus zn squared. Ah, yes, thank you. So it is from right there, yep. Good, xn, yeah, xn plus zn squared, that gets fed into the add 121665 times 4xn zn, thanks. All right, and then at this point I think I have that result is x2n, and this result is z2n. Okay, what about x2n plus 1 and z2n plus 1? Here we've got all four of the inputs coming in. We're going to multiply xn minus zn by xn plus 1 plus zn plus 1. And circling through everything, we're going to multiply xn plus zn by xn plus 1 minus zn plus 1. And then we add and subtract these results. Plus, minus. And then squaring the plus, we get x2n plus 1, and squaring the minus, well, both of these get squared. And then taking the minus and multiplying it by x1 times x1, we get exactly z2n plus 1. And the other one, we don't have to bother multiplying by z1, because z1 is 1, and that gives us x2n plus 1. All right, there are Montgomery's two isogeny formulas. The hidden lurking two isogenies here are in fact the plus minus and the squares running around. Montgomery expressed doubling as a composition of a couple of two isogenies. Not that he says this in his paper. It's something that has been rediscovered more recently, and there's been a few papers now on doing two isogeny compositions in more generality. Somebody asked Peter Montgomery, hey, how did you come up with your formulas? And he said, well, I was just playing with two isogenies. Would have been nice if he'd actually said that in his paper, and then maybe people would have generalized it back then. But okay, that's the situation. Looking at these formulas, how much work is there? Well, for each bit of E, we have, I see, one squaring, two squarings, three squarings, four squarings. I see a multiplication by 121665. There is one multiplication by 121665. There are five more multiplications. Looking for times in this picture, there's one, there's one, there's one, there's a times. That's four of them. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Total of 10 multiplications. So the remaining five ones are not special. There are five more multiplications. And there are not very many additions, not very many subtractions. Looks like four additions and four subtractions. One, two, three, four subtractions. One, two, three, four additions. Four plus, four minus. And that's for each bit of the exponent. And let's not forget the final multiplication by a reciprocal. Count that carefully. It is 254. Squarings, and 12 multiplications, the 11 for the powering of Zn, and one more to multiply by Xn, 11 multiplications for the final division. You can see here what I was saying about the final division being only about 10% of the computation, that there's 255 bits of E, each of which has a bunch of multiplications and squarings, and there's 255 or so squarings at the end, which is just 1 times 255 versus the 10 or so times 255. And implementation results, of course, correspond to this, that everybody sees the final division being only 10% or so of the computation. What was I going to fill up the rest of this piece with? Ah, yes, just to emphasize the total cost, there are overall something like 2,800 multiplications, many of them being special, like squarings or multiplications by small numbers. Which brings me to the question of, okay, how much faster is a squaring than a multiplication? How much slower are these multiplications mod 2 to the 255 minus 19 compared to the 2 to the 130 minus 5 that we explored in some detail before? I have a few slides on that before I get into that. Any questions about the high-level formulas, the sequence of additions, multiplications we're doing? Yeah? The two isogeny work, there's a paper by Dosh Ikar and Kohel in PKC 2006, which explores several different shapes of elliptic curves having a nice decomposition of multiplication by 2 and, in some cases, multiplication by 3 into a composition of 2 isogenies or 3 isogenies, and getting all sorts of interesting results. In fact, some of the best asymptotics I know are exactly from their 3 isogeny formulas, although, well, I'll get into asymptotics versus reality in a little while. And then there's Pierrick Gaudry's paper on theta functions for genus 2, where he takes the same attitude, and I think he did that before Dosh Ikar and Kohel, sometime in 2005. That paper was online. That's Pierrick's now famous paper on theta function computation of hyperelliptic curve scalar multiplication, which I'll also get to a little bit later. Sure. So the papers that I'm mentioning, there is PKC 2006 paper by Dosh and Ikar and David Kohl. And then there is, from 2005, Gaudry's paper on theta functions. And these are exploring other situations in which doubling, for example, or tripling, is a composition of two simple maps. In the case of Montgomery, you can see there's some sort of initial plus minus and then some squarings. And then there's another sequence of some pluses and minuses and squarings. And some of that linear map and squaring, that is on two inputs, that is a two isogeny, and then composing two of those ends up with doubling. The fact that you can get doubling in this way, well, that's not something a priori that you would expect, but if you write down proper shapes of curves, then you do get these nice, simple formulas. Maybe I should also mention there's an older paper by the Chudnovsky brothers, same time as Montgomery, which goes through very similar formulas and even gets to the 13 or so multiplications per bit for some formulas, which they don't say anything about the isogenies, but you can review some of what they did from that perspective. Montgomery gets all the credit because he went further and got everything down to 10 multiplications for every bit. Montgomery's formulas were just for elliptic curves. He could change the 486662 to something else. That doesn't matter. Change the prime to something else. Doesn't matter. But it was just for elliptic curves and just for elliptic curves with the x cubed plus something x squared plus x. There's a subsequent paper by Plier and Joie which goes through the slower computations for other curves. But okay, I'll come back to the question of what you can do for other curves in a little bit. I'm sorry? No. For the purposes of this course, those formulas by Montgomery are the definition of elliptic curve point addition. So the fact that those correspond to the real definition of elliptic curve group operations in terms of Picard groups, that is something which I'm definitely not going to go through. You can, however, find that in various books. For instance, there's a nice book edited by Cohen and Fry with many, many authors, which has all sorts of formulas and proofs and references to the literature called The Handbook of Elliptic and Hyperelliptic Curve Cryptography. And that will have much more information about all the things I'm talking about except for the detailed optimization, which is newer stuff. But they certainly have all sorts of references to Montgomery and to proofs that Montgomery is related to normal elliptic curve formulas and then probably 10 other shapes of elliptic curves, which I will talk about a little bit later. Ignoring the question of what other things you can do, are there more questions about the formulas for Montgomery's curves? Okay, let me say a bit about the low level. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail here because I've been doing that on the web page, but I do want to do the summary of how this compares to what we've seen before. Arithmetic mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. At this point, our task is to do thousands of multiplications mod 2 to the 255 minus 19 as compared to what did we see before? We had the poly 1305 main loop, which was doing a multiplication and an addition mod 2 to the 130 minus 5, and needed 68 floating point operations to do it. Well, 68 floating point additions and some multiplications, 68 UltraSpark cycles with properly optimized code, and that was for an addition and a multiplication mod 2 to the 130 minus 5, with, I should emphasize, a restricted input. This multiplication was multiplication by some number r, which we've featured throughout the course, and that r was restricted. It wasn't allowed to be quite as big as it could be. That sped up the multiplications a little bit in a way that I haven't quantified. Of course, the computations we're doing for Montgomery are more difficult. For curve 25519, we have a much larger prime, twice as many bits, instead of 2 to the 130 minus 5, we have 2 to the 255 minus 19, chosen for similar reasons. We'd like to be close to some power of 2 for speeding up the reduction and the choice of how big the power of 2 is, that's dictated by security constraints, which for elliptic curves, there's more structure the attacker can use, which is why we need twice as many bits. The 19 is just the smallest difference to a power of 2 around this region. We can be a little smaller than 2 to the 256 because there's no concern here about encoding a chunk of a message efficiently as a 256-bit number. No reason to have this being a bit bigger than 256, so convenient to be smaller than a little smaller than 256. Anyway, easy prime to choose by the same criteria as before, but it has to be twice as big because the security criteria have changed. And we also don't have a restriction on what we're multiplying by. We have unrestricted multiplications. So obviously we're going to have a lot more cycles involved in doing these multiplications. And you might guess that, well, doubling the number of bits should multiply the cost by a factor of 3 or 4 maybe, and then having unrestricted multiplications, well, makes things maybe a little bit slower. Here's some actual numbers, which, again, I'm not going to go through all of the how you get these complexities, but if you look on the course webpage, for those of you doing similar projects, you've, I know, started looking at this already, detailed on course webpage is how many multiplications, well, oh yeah, so the intuitive part of this is just like we were splitting 130-bit numbers into, was it 4 pieces, 8 pieces? 4 was maybe too ambitious. 6 is maybe the right number. But we split 255-bit numbers into 12 pieces is the best I know how to do. Split a 255-bit number into 12 pieces, each of which is, what's 255 divided by 12? Something like 21.25. The radix here is 2 to the 21.25. If that radix sounds a bit weird, then, well, look on the course webpage for details of what it means to use a non-integer radix, but basically it's chopping the 255 bits into 12 pieces as evenly as possible, keeping in mind that you want the multiplication to be consistent with your chopping, and that dictates the definition of what this radix is. There's 21 or 22 bits in each piece. 255 over 12 is a little less than 22. It's 21.25. And then when you multiply two of those numbers, then you also have to do the reduction modulo 2 to the 255 minus 19, and here's the final number. Maybe I should emphasize these pieces are floating point pieces, floating point registers. You have 12 registers whose sum, the sum of the values in those registers, is your 255-bit integer, and then multiplying those takes 184 floating point additions plus 155 floating point multiplications, and that is for complete multiplication mod 2 to the 255 minus 19, including reduction, carrying, producing a result suitable for further multiplications. You can even do, you can do an addition, and then that costs a little extra, and then multiply, and then have a result suitable for further multiplications. This is not the best possible. The web page goes to some extra effort to talk about Karatsuba's method after talking about the basic method, which instead of doing the 144 multiplications and 121 additions you'd expect, plus the carrying, plus the reduction, Karatsuba saves a little bit. It ends up being 177 floating point additions and 153 floating point multiplications. The bottleneck here is the floating point additions, which has been reduced by, okay, 7 out of 184, sounds like a few percent, which is not a serious reduction, but hey, if it's doable and doesn't cost too much in terms of programming time, why not save a little bit? As your numbers get bigger and bigger, Karatsuba's method becomes more and more important. It's something which I've tended to skip in my own software, just figuring even the small programming time for it, it's not worth the effort for a small speed up. But okay, it is done in detail on the course webpage now, and including the software. So that's the cost. 177 cycles is the minimum cost, according to these methods, for multiplying mod 2 to the 255 minus 19. Now, some of the multiplications I said are special. And how special are they? How much faster are they? Well, if you want to multiply by a really small number, you would think that's much, much faster than multiplying by a big number. And it is. There's lots and lots of things that you can do better, because 121665 is much smaller than 255 bits. It's 17 bits. And that means that almost all the pieces are zero. 11 of the 12 floating point pieces are zero that you're multiplying by. And of course, you don't bother multiplying by zero. You skip multiplying by zero, look at your formulas, and wherever you're multiplying by zero, when you plug in 121665 as one of the numbers you're multiplying by, you just don't do it. And then you see that some of the numbers you're adding are zero, and of course you don't bother doing those. Skip adding zero. And you even see that some of the carries you're doing are carries of zero, so skip carrying zero and reducing zero. Which might seem like it throws away almost your entire computation. You just have to take your 12 pieces and multiply them by 121665, and that fits into floating point, but you still have to do some carries of those results. And that takes a little bit of time, which ends up actually being noticeable compared to this 177 or so. The total cost of multiplying by a small number is 48 floating point additions. And that's an illustration of how expensive carries, even just carrying 12 numbers, saying I've got 12 products and I want to add the high piece, high part of one product to the next and do that 12 times. In floating point, that's not such an easy operation. Not so easy with integers either. There's 13 floating point multiplications for 12 multiplications by this 121665 and one multiplication by 19 times 2 to the minus 255. And that's the final cost for multiplication by 121665. For comparison, if you just do an addition, it costs 12 floating point additions for 12 pieces, or a subtraction, 12 floating point additions, counting subtractions as additions. So this is something like four times as expensive as addition and one-third as expensive as multiplication, a little less than one-third of a general multiplication. There was, okay, this is one of the 10 multiplications, won't worry about it too much. Then there is the squaring. There are four squarings out of the 10 multiplications. One of the multiplications is this one, which goes down to just a small fraction of its cost. How about the squarings? Well, squaring I don't actually know the history of the two speedups I'm going to mention here. One of them you can find everywhere, and one of them is a little harder to find and definitely saves more time. The way that I wrote this on the sheet was just writing down the polynomial formulas. Let's say that you have a polynomial that you want to square. I'll write it as the sum of some coefficients, c sub I, times some variable, call it x to the I. And this is a sum over i's. And let's say that there are n coefficients here. If you square that, well, you could write down the square in the simplest way as the sum over all pairs I and j of c sub I times c sub j times x to the I plus j. That's ignoring the fact you're doing a squaring, just treating your squaring as a general multiplication. You multiply each of the n coefficients by each of the n coefficients for a total of n squared multiplications. And then you have to add them the appropriate number of times to get just 2n minus 1 results. The first speed up in squaring, the big speed up in squaring, saving almost half the work, is you express this sum as, first of all, there's multiplications of ci by ci, ci squared times x to the 2i. So there you're multiplying the n coefficients by themselves, a total of n multiplications. And then what about I being different from j? Well, you say that twice you have to add for the i's that are less than j. You have to add ci cj times x to the I plus j. Because if I is bigger than j, then ci cj is just cj ci, and flip around the I and j and add two copies of ci cj, and that's only half as many multiplications. Out of the n squared original, we got rid of n, and then chopped the remaining ones in half. Here we've got n squared minus n divided by 2 multiplications. But actually, it's a little bit better to do the following. Let's take the sum of ci squared x to the 2i, and this is again n multiplications, and then put the 2 inside the sum. Wait a minute, isn't that slower, doubling each ci cj? Well, let me put it further inside the 2ci. Multiply that by cj times x to the I plus j. Now, we once again have here n squared minus n over 2 multiplications. But let's also count the doublings. How many doublings are there? Well, it looks like just one doubling, but it's doubling many polynomial coefficients. And how many polynomial coefficients are there? Well, something like 2n minus 3. This is 2n minus 3 doublings. It's not 2n minus 1. Not all of the outputs have doublings involved because C0 squared doesn't have any 2 times anything added to it, and Cn minus 1 squared doesn't. Overall, there's 2n minus 3 doublings. How many doublings are there in the second formula? Well, we just have to double each of the CIs for I less than something. There's only n minus 1 doublings there, which is saving n minus 2 doublings. Okay, if n is really big, then the n squared over 2 is much more important effect than the saving the doublings, but hey, might as well reduce the operations further. So there's the squaring speedups, and if you plug in the particular size of n and take account of the cost of carrying and so on, then all right, here's the final numbers that you end up with. Here's the summary of the bottlenecks. Every multiplication costs 177 floating point additions. Every squaring ends up costing, after you chop out a lot of the multiplications and a lot of the additions you need and chop out some doublings here, you end up with 118 floating point additions for squaring. A lot of times you'll see people quoting some square to multiply ratio, which is, say, 0.8, because somebody told them it was 0.8. Well, okay, here I am telling you the square to multiply ratio for this field on the UltraSpark is 118 over 177, which you can decide for yourself how close that is to 0.8. There's 48 floating point additions for each multiplication by 121665, and then there's 12 floating point additions for each addition or subtraction. So, plugging this into Montgomery's formulas, how many squarings were there? There were, let's see, 4 squarings. Let's start with the biggest cost, 5 general multiplications. 5 times 177 for multiples. So that's 885 floating point additions. For squarings, there were 4 squarings times 118, which sounds like 472 for squarings. You can see the general 5 multiplications end up almost twice as much cost as the 4 squarings. All right, there's one multiplication by 121665, and that's almost unnoticeable compared to the 885 and 472. And actually, additions are more noticeable because there's 8 additions. 8 times 12 is 96 floating point additions, counting the additions and subtractions together. And the total is 1501 per bit. And then there's a little more, 1501 times 255 plus division, etc. And the final bottom line is 414907 floating point additions. Now, those of you who've been keeping score on the web page know that my current code, which takes no account of latency or other delays, is taking 2 million cycles for this. but I'm sure it will be below a million cycles in the end. And I'll tell you at some point, maybe as part of the project reports, my project, I'll tell you how close this comes to 414,000. Certainly even the 2 million is a speed record for the UltraSpark for elliptic curves. Diffie-Hellman, aside from my previous NIST P224 work, where I put more work into the optimization than I have yet done for curve 25519, but okay, I expect the UltraSpark to be something on this scale of number of cycles. Where I've done more optimization effort, let me bounce for my last few minutes to the x86 architecture, where I figured when I was writing this stuff, I meant it as a real-world thing rather than a teaching tool, so I kind of ignored the UltraSpark and focused on the Pentium and Athlon. Which are different from the UltraSpark. Let me write down the critical differences. Remember that x86 floating point registers are bigger than UltraSpark floating point registers. And hey, bigger is better. Bigger floating point precision. Floating point register precision. Because there's 80-bit registers which have 64 bits of precision instead of 64-bit registers with 53 bits of precision. And that lets you multiply considerably larger numbers. Instead of having to chop down your 255-bit numbers into 12 pieces, each having 20-something bits, and oh, I didn't say that, the 22 bits each, makes sense that if you were to square or multiply a couple 22-bit numbers, you'd have a 44 or so bit number. And then you might be adding a bunch of those and maybe multiplying by some 19s, and it just barely fits into 53 bits. If you have 64 bits in your floating point numbers, you can use a larger radix. And what I did for this one was 10 pieces in radix 2 to the 255 over 10 is 25.5. You have a multiple of 2 to the 0, and then a multiple of 2 to the 26, and then a multiple of 2 to the 51, and so on. Having to multiply 10 pieces by 10 pieces is, of course, substantially less expensive than having to multiply 12 pieces by 12 pieces. 100 versus 144 is considerably smaller. Now, I just mentioned the quadratic effect of 10 squared versus 12 squared. There's also linear effects, which are not so impressive, going from 12 down to 10, but it's definitely fewer floating point operations, considerably fewer floating point operations. But the x86 architecture, most of the implementations of it, the Athlon being the spectacular exception, all of the Intel processors will only do one of these 64-bit floating point operations per cycle. Taking, for example, the Pentium M, has only one floating point unit. Instead of the separate floating point adder and floating point multiplier on the UltraSpark. As I've mentioned before, the Pentium M, most of the Pentiums, all the Pentiums will do only one floating point addition or one floating point multiplication each cycle. The Athlon will do one of each, like the UltraSpark. So the Athlon is just better, but the Pentium M, has this advantage, bigger numbers, disadvantage, fewer operations on the numbers per cycle. So I wrote down my costs for doing the, just to say the conclusion here. Yeah, overall, the cycle counts end up being comparable. I told you last time what the bottom line was for somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 cycles for doing the curve 25519 computation, certainly a lot less than the 16 million that I was guessing at the beginning. For the x86, if you're counting floating point operations, floating point adds plus floating point multiplies, then you look at what I had before and say things like 177 plus 153, a lot more. But it's not so bad. It's only, 243 floating point operations for multiplication. Exactly, because you have to do a lot fewer multiplications instead of, again, this is much fewer, many fewer than 177 plus 153, but you have to count the total number of operations because there's only one floating point unit. And then 162 was the bottom line for squaring. Square to multiply ratio for these chips, well, for the Pentium M, is 2/3, 162 over 243. 55 was for the multiplication by 121665, and 10 for the additions and subtractions, because there's 10 pieces instead of 12. And that one's just better than the 12 that we had before. So putting these numbers together, well, again, the ratios have somewhat changed. Overall, the numbers are somewhat bigger, and the total number of floating point operations was 589825 floating point operations. This was actually using more than what I've described because I used some floating point operations that could have integer operations substituting, and maybe things will be sped up by doing that, but I haven't had time to do the experiments yet. Let me just say some of these operations, if you try to get this 589825 number, I'm sure you're interested in doing all the details of the calculations. If you try to get this number, then you'll see, oops, it's actually not that many floating point operations because I was, for instance, using floating point operations for the selection between x2n and x2n plus 1, and that's actually better to do with integer operations, but I haven't written the software yet. There's maybe 10% more than it has to be, taking everything into account. The actual performance on the Pentium M was a little bit more than this after writing the code carefully, 640838 Pentium M cycles. Same number I mentioned last time. Which leaves a little room for improvement. There's various delays that I haven't been able to figure out at this point, and this kind of 10% gap, 92% of the cycles are being used for floating point operations, and you could hope to do better. You could hope to remove some of the non-floating point operation cycles and speed up the code to even better than, say, 600,000 cycles. That would be requiring more information about the Pentium M than I have, but maybe if you just experiment with enough variations of the software, you can get it going faster. Anyway, it's a 10% improvement that you could hope for. There's lots of situations where the fastest software that I have is still something where maybe there's 5%, 10% improvements without having to work too hard. I certainly don't want to suggest that everything I've done is optimal. Okay, this afternoon I'm going to be telling you alternatives. There have already been some questions about other curves. I'm not going to spend much time on other choices of primes because, well, this type of prime is clearly the best that we have, but I will say a bit about other possibilities for fields where the considerations are different from the Pauli 1305 situation. So I've got some slides on that, and then I'll jump right into RSA and Raven-Williams, finish things off with public key signatures. Were there any quick questions about the cost of computing curve 25519 on real CPUs? I don't see anybody eagerly raising their hands, so if there are any other questions, then come see me. Otherwise, I will see people at 3:30.